Welcome to Career Tools. This week, Compress Your Work, Chapter 2, If It's Stupid, But It Works. The questions this class answers are, how do I get more done in less time? How do I get faster at the things I have to do? And how does human factors engineering help me? We all remember 2020, the year everybody went virtual. And it was a crisis year. And probably 2021 was too. And 2022, you were just about getting your feet under you again. Your management practice in crisis mode is just what's expedient. But now it looks like we're going to be remote, or at least some of our teams are going to be remote some of the time forever. And if you haven't gone through the effective remote manager training, then you'll still be in crisis mode and not as effective as you can be. We're running a virtual effective remote manager training starting on the 21st of March. So you can move from being a crisis remote manager to a professional remote manager. We'd love to see you there. A few weeks ago, Andrew, you and I talked about a six-step model for compressing your work with the promise that people could get twice the work done in half the time. The clickbait of, number six will astound you. And in that model, we said, as one of the steps is you analyze your work and then you choose one area to experiment on and try and make that quicker, to try and make yourself more efficient, to find the tricks to make it an easier job or a quicker job. And we gave you some ideas about how you might approach tasks differently as you experiment. But in this guidance, we're going to give you a couple more ways to think about tasks from a different perspective, hopefully, that may give you more ideas about how you can make the things that you do easier or faster.
Yeah. Our outline for today is, number one, don't worry about being stupid. Number two, use human factors engineering. And number three, use Pokeyoc.
So the first one is, don't worry about being stupid.
Yeah.
I volunteer for that one. I'm going to worry about being stupid. But the thing is, don't worry about being stupid. Worry about being effective. If it's stupid, but it works, it's not stupid, is supposedly the second rule of the army, but it's also, the third rule of engineers, and everybody has claimed it because it's so good.
It seems to be worked into every discipline.
Exactly. And who knows who said it first, but it's such a good phrase. It's such a good idea that everybody's claimed it. And the idea is, if you apply it to this, it's to let you off the hook about finding some complicated solution, or finding something that's the silver bullet that cures everything, or finding something that nobody's ever thought of before because, you're a genius. You don't need to do any of those things. It can be the most stupid idea, the most stupid solution. If it's working for you, then it's not stupid. All the people that put their car keys on top of their lunch in the fridge before they go to work, so that they need their keys to leave the house and that reminds them to pick up their lunch. Is it stupid? Maybe. But if it works, it doesn't matter. It means you get your lunch every day, and that's important.
Right. It may seem stupid to someone else. Someone else may say, hey, I need to run out to your car. Like, where are the keys? And you say, well, they're in the fridge on top of my lunch. Somebody may say, what? Why would you do that? That's so stupid. But I'm never going to forget my lunch because I can't leave without picking my keys up from on top of my lunch. So, I think we got to get over that sometimes. It's like there's the mnemonic device for remembering the cardinal directions, right? North, north, east, south, and west. I think you may have learned never eat shredded wheat. Yes. I learned never eat soggy waffles, which to me—
Both breakfast foods.
Yeah, both breakfast foods, right? Don't start the day eating the wrong thing, but it helps you remember. And that's all that matters, right? What matters is being effective and getting the result that we want.
Yeah, just because, you learned that when you were five and it still sounds stupid today. It sounds silly.
Yeah.
Never eat shredded wheat is like, why? Well, why would I never eat it? But it helps you remember.
We just got back from a little road trip that we took, and my wife was singing with the kids this song that she learned in grade school to remember the states.
Oh, yeah.
And she was like, you didn't learn that in grade school? And I said, no. Like, I didn't have anything like that. And she goes, well, how do you remember the states? And I said, I don't.
Right.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as much as she felt silly about this song that she learned and still knew, she has a very easy way to remember all 50 states. So right. If it takes doing something silly or seemingly silly, right? If it means that you remove all the social media apps from your phone a day where you need to really concentrate on work, then that's not stupid. It's just a step that you take to be more effective. It doesn't matter if you feel like, oh, you know, other people don't get distracted by that, so I shouldn't either. It doesn't matter, right? It can't be that you just need more, you know, willpower always. Why waste that precious resource when you can just take a simple action? Don't force yourself to, you know, engage in that disciplined activity. Create a venue or a circumstance where the discipline's easy, right? Mm-hmm. You can apply that to other things. So the same goes for anti-productivity practices, like keeping the files that you use the most often on your desktop. We advise against something like that, right? That just seems, you know, to us, mm-hmm. fraught with potential error.
Danger,
right? You know, potentially you don't have those files. If you transfer to your laptop, you know, they're stuck there. Lots of different reasons. You could lose them. They could accidentally get deleted. They may not be retrievable. But if it speeds up your work and you don't experience any downsides, then do it. No one knows your work better than you.
Yeah, or your brain processes or the way the work flows through you.
Yeah.
And like, you know, even if there's 20 of you all processing insurance claims and you're all sat next to each other, there's a process flow for the process, but there's also the process flow of the way you think about things.
Yeah.
And so what we're going to do now is tell you more sophisticated ways of using the same principle. This, if you don't want to go around saying, it's my solution, it's stupid, but it works, you can use these phrases, which are slightly different takes on the same idea, and you'll sound really smart. So,
yeah,
you know. So if you're worried that using a stupidity principle makes you sound stupid, you can use these words and it'll seem like you've been really concentrating. So the first one is human factors engineering.
Yeah, human factors engineering is a discipline that seeks to create products and processes which make work more efficient by working with what we know about human beings rather than against ourselves. So engineers continually ask, how can we make this easier or faster or more accurate or more efficient? Most of us, we ask ourselves once and then we don't ever ask it again until we're completely underwater and we're drowning and maybe listening to podcasts like this one.
like, oh, I hope they have the answer.
Right.
Yeah, one of the answers is to keep asking yourself that question.
Yep.
So one example of research that human factors engineers have done is the arrangement of keys on a telephone keypad, whether it's a pretend one, like on an iPhone, it's on the glass, or whether it's actually something where you can push the button. Mm-hmm. But when they first decided to move away from rotary telephones or found the method of moving away, they used a variety of arrangements and button sizes and typefaces before they settled on what we see today. And if you've ever gone from using a computer keyboard that has the numbers as a 10 key on the right-hand side and to dialing the number on a push button phone or even your the image on your cell phone, you've probably noticed you've dialed the wrong number. And if you look, you probably don't notice this until it goes wrong. The numbers on your phone and the numbers on the 10 key are different. They're in a different order. They're the wrong way up. On a telephone, 1, 2, and 3 are at the top. And on a keyboard, 7, 8, and 9 are at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And so the people at Bell who were doing this research about the numbers, they tested a bunch of different layouts, including like the 3x3 matrix with 0 at the bottom, 2 rows of 5 numbers, horizontally or vertically, versions that were circular, just like the rotary telephones, clockwise and counterclockwise. And they concluded that the arrangement that we have now with 1, 2, 3 across the top was the easiest and the fastest and the one that was least likely to cause mistakes. But they didn't clearly ask the people that do calculators, because calculators come the other way up. And apparently when the people who did calculators were asked, how did you decide on that configuration? They said, we just put the numbers on there.
No, that's funny.
Didn't do a whole bunch of research.
That's funny.
So the phone people are right.
Yeah, of course. I also wonder about a regular keyboard. There's another kind of keyboard or famous layout for a keyboard called a Dvorak keyboard. Mm-hmm. And it's organized. Apparently, the QWERTY keyboard is not organized in a way that is where your fingers rest on home keys that are most frequently used. And that is, I think, has to do with spacing out back in, you know, like mm-hmm. old typewriters having to space out the letters in certain ways. But anyway, so that's another thing where just asking, I mean, this guy, Dvorak, I don't know a lot mm-hmm. about him, but he asked the question, like, is this the right way that, you know, makes the most sense efficiently, and came up with a whole new keyboard that some people use. I don't, but I'm sure some people use it.
And I'm sure that keyboard proves a point that we didn't include here, but is a point about efficiency, which is you have to go through a period of lower efficiency before you get higher. If you try and use, even if you try and use somebody else's keyboard and the keys are closer together or further apart than yours, mm-hmm. you constantly hit the wrong number because muscle memory tells you where those keys are. If you've got to learn a whole new keyboard for a little while, you are literally going to be looking at the keyboard for where those keys are. And you'll get slower because it's harder to learn, but you've got to go through that in order to get to be faster again.
Absolutely. I mean, even on things as simple or seemingly simple as getting an assistant, right? You think immediately your productivity is going to double, but then you have the increased need for communication and things that mm-hmm. you didn't usually have to communicate that now you have to. And there's things that get, you know, lost in translation. And so there's a little bit of a kind of feeling out process for that. And so all of this, I think we went on a big couple of tangents there that are all my fault, but human factors are often about the physicality of our work. For example, if you're right-handed, keep your phone on the left-hand side of your desk. That way, when it rings, you can pick it up and you can pick up a pen with your dominant hand. Rather than having to switch ears or juggle or put it on your shoulder and do all that stuff, I'm actually doing the movement now when I know nobody can see me except Wendy. You can broaden that out to that principle to those things that you use most often or that are, you know, most nearest to you or most accessible, that type of stuff. You know, the arrangement of those things that you use the most, if that's arranged in a way, if those are arranged in a way that make the most sense or are easily used or easily accessible, then that's going to speed up your work. That's going to reduce the number of errors you make. It's going to reduce the number, or not the number, but the amount of brain power that you need to put mm-hmm. into it. All of that being a way to help you get more done and accomplish more during your day. And think of everything. Think of the arrangement of your desk, your desktop on your computer, your files, your office, the bag that you take back and forth. I know we've mentioned, I think, a few times about putting... Oh, it was the How to Work on an Airplane podcast mm-hmm. where you're like, put things in the same pocket so that you're not, one, you can't count on visibility. It could be dark on the plane or whatever, but you also don't want to take the extra time rooting around and moving things and doing all that. So all of those are things that you can think of, or at least start thinking of, to make yourself more efficient.
And the objects that you use have to be fit for purpose. So if you have to adapt to the object because it's the wrong size or it's broken or it just doesn't work the way you want it to, then you need a new one of whatever it is. I added an extra camera to my computer setup, and now I don't have enough USB ports. It's driving me mental because every time I needed to plug the microphone in to record for the podcast, I've got to choose something to unplug, and it better not be any of the things I need. And so, as soon as we're done, and I've mowed the lawn because that's on my list of things to do. I am going to Amazon and buying a USB thing with more because I can't deal with it. And it's a minute maybe,
mm-hmm.
but it happens often enough that it's worth 10 minutes of research on Amazon to buy another one, and it will be here tomorrow and life will be wonderful again.
Oh, yeah. I remember one time I plugged in my phone at night. I woke up the next day. My phone wasn't charged. So I unplugged it. I flipped the cable over, plugged it in, and it charged. And I was like, oh. So then the next night, I just plugged it in and then flipped it around mm-hmm. and plugged it in, made sure I had the right side. And then I thought, well, I'm never going to do this again. I'm going to go buy a cable. Yes. Like, this is ridiculous. I'm not going to spend the rest of my life flipping over the cable to make sure which side is which. Or I could have put it like a dot, I guess, on one of them. Mm-hmm. But we're going to talk about Poke Yoke and making sure that we make it foolproof and where we can't screw it up.
Yeah. And the last thing you need to do is wake up and your phone not be charged.
Oh, it's the worst.
Another example is clocks. My parents are currently staying at my house. I have a clock in my dining room, which is an hour out because I only look at it in the mornings and I know that it's an hour out. And the clock on my oven is like a really random, like 47 minutes out. And it is driving them mad because they look at clocks and then they're doing the mental math of, wait a minute, she told me that it's 47 minutes off or whatever. And so if that were actually bothering me, it clearly doesn't because right. it's been like that for 6 months. But if it were bothering me, then I should buy a new clock. And one thing about clocks is, if you buy an analog clock that's big enough to see in your peripheral vision, especially in your office, you can buy one that's big enough and in the right place that you can see it. So you can just flip your eyes to it and back again without like losing the eye contact piece with the person you're talking to. And I learned this from I don't know where, but if you have an analog clock, it tells you both the amount of time that's passed and the amount of time to go.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a digital clock only tells you the amount of time that's passed. The hands sort of give you a visual of 3/4 of the time is gone and there's a quarter left and you can see it in
right.
a way that you can't see it on a digital clock.
Yeah, digital clocks, I think mentally when I see a digital clock, they're more precise because I know exactly to the minute what it is, but then I feel like I have to do math and I'm mm-hmm. exerting more mental energy. With an analog clock, I can see the minute hand is nearing the bottom of the hour. So I have a good idea of how much time has elapsed, how much time is left to go, exactly like you said. And if you're on a lot of Zoom calls or Teams calls or a lot of video chats, most computers, I think. I know Mac has apps, and I'm sure that there are widgets or whatever for the Windows equivalent is, where you can get analog
like a
clock.
Sticky, like clock. Is it like a picture of your clock on the desktop?
Mm. Yeah, they're kind of transparent or translucent, and so you can see through them, but they're always there, and that makes it so you don't have to break eye contact as well.
Yeah, and you don't even need to buy a clock.
Yeah.
You can just Google it while you listen to us.
Just Google it. Permanent sticky notes. Permanent sticky notes are an indication that your process or tools are not as efficient as they could be. I think almost every professional I've ever worked with, they have a sticky note that is in the corner of their desktop or corner of their monitor, and it's been there since their second week. They learned something, they put it there, and it's just always there. And they refer to it over and oh yeah. over and over again. So that's something that human factors engineers look for when they analyze environments. You know, for example, a machine with a sticky note taped to it that says blue side up indicates that somehow it's not obvious that the blue side of a piece of machinery should be facing up. The USB-C port is a solution to that same problem. Never fails. You go to plug in a USB, it's always upside down. It's how always. Does that happen? Always
like
upside down.
It's like toast with jam on it, falls jam side down. Actually, I think there's some science about weight and stuff with that one, and USBs is just Murphy's Law, but
right.
yeah, somebody decided, we'll have a new USB and you can insert it either way.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Just solve that problem.
Yeah. A sticky note with a phone number on it. that you use frequently is an indication that you could make your work faster by having that number pre-programmed into your phone or your dialing software on your computer. Even if what it is the number to the local Chinese restaurant down the street that you get your takeout lunch from.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to call that number 2-3 times a week, don't have it on a sticky note on your desk. Have it pre-programmed, ready to dial. Just press, you know, the speed dial.
And you can disguise it as healthy lunch.
Yes.
You don't have to write Chinese. And human factors also includes ergonomics. So if you are uncomfortable when you're working or the way you sit or stand causes pain, then changing the environment may well enable you to work more efficiently. There's nothing like the distraction of pain to make you less efficient. Having a desk at the right height or a keyboard with minimal key travel or the right lighting, they're all simple but often overlooked factors in efficiency.
Another small one that I'm going to add is if you use cheap, crappy pens, The number of times that you're going to have to grab a pen, scribble furiously, you know, try to get the ink to start running, just use slightly better pens.
Yeah. Upgrade to a $2 pen.
Upgrade to a pen where you know you're going to grab it and it's going to work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Simple. And that gives you fewer pens too. Then you don't have them all over the place.
Yeah. And you've got 100 and only 10 of them work and you're not sure which 10.
Mm-hmm.
So the second way of looking at this is poker yoke, which is another sort of systems fancy way of saying if it's stupid, but it works.
Yeah.
It has a similar end goal, which is preventing mistakes that take time and energy to fix. But instead of looking at humans and making the work easier for humans, it tries to eliminate any error where you could make a mistake. So it was applied by Shingo, I'm sure I pronounced that wrong, in the 1960s to industrial processes. And it was designed to prevent human errors as part of the Toyota production system. And that was adopted by many companies as part of the lean manufacturing movement. So you've probably experienced this, even if you didn't know what it was called. For example, you cannot start your microwave or the washer if the door is open.
Yep.
It won't start. You can't start a microwave without. You can't put an automatic car into drive unless your foot is on the brake.
Mm-hmm.
For the reason that if you could, you could drive through the garage or the parking lot or whatever without knowing. You have to have your foot on the brake to engage the engine. And that's one of those things where it's designed to stop you making a mistake.
Mm-hmm. For those of us who we'll set our phone down and leave our phone behind, right? We can take a lesson from this. Is there a way to make it obvious that your phone is not with you? If your phone always goes in the same pocket, you'll always be able to just quickly know, okay, I've got my phone with me. I don't have my phone with me. That pocket being empty will be that reminder that your phone is missing.
I was waiting at the airport for my parents to arrive and their plane was delayed. And so I was there for 2 hours. And I swear every 5 minutes, there was an announcement of, could so-and-so come back to the TSA security where they left their whatever, like constantly. And you think they know, oh, it probably only happens once a day. It was every 5 minutes.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I use this in golf. I play golf. And sometimes when you're playing golf, you bring like a wedge and a putter up to the green. And all my wedges have white grips on them, so that when they're sitting in the grass or the dark grass around the green, I'm never going to miss a white grip sticking out, right? Like it stands out. And I always put my club between the green and the cart, so that way I never, you know, I have to walk right by it. I remember this, or I remember when I was reading this in the show notes before we were recording, I thought of when we first had kids. You know, I have three kids. And when we first had kids, there had been a few instances in the news of people leaving their kids in the back seat. And we were so horrified about this and trying to figure out how do we make sure that never happens. And I remember hearing someone say, well, there's, you know, a way that you could kind of make sure that you don't forget, you know, your child in the back seat is you just put something important in the back seat with them. So that way you have to go get
it. That's like putting the keys on the lunch.
Yeah. And I thought to myself, what's more important than your child?
Yes.
But But I understand the point, right? The point is something else that'll kind of jog your memory. And it's just, yeah, it just is one of those things. At the end of the day, what you could always do is if you find yourself forgetting something or you find yourself, there's a way you need to remember something, you can always physically attach it to your body. You can attach your phone. You know, my wife has one of those phone cases or one of those things that sticks onto the phone case where it's like a little grip hand thing. And
yes,
and she's always holding it by that, right? You could pull the old Dwight Schrute from The Office. He's got his phone on a clip on his belt. There's a lot of different things you could do, but something that physically attaches to you is a great way to make sure you will never forget it. I remember in grade school, I don't know if you ever did this, Wendy, but if we had to remember something, and we're starting to do this with our kids now, is you put something attached to them, right? You have a rubber band around their wrist or tie a string around their finger or staple a note to their shirt. Mm-hmm. That's a bit extreme, you know.
Well, it depends what it says, really.
Right, exactly. So there's always that kind of physical component to make sure you don't forget.
And if you never forget your phone and you're thinking, why would I do this? I'd look like an idiot. Mm-hmm. Then that answer is not for you. But if you are the kind of person who forgets their phone frequently, then maybe attaching it to you is the answer for you for this thing. And you probably have something else that you are awesome at that other people forget. Like, let's not make people feel bad for needing a solution. Let's just find solutions for people because we all have different brains.
Absolutely.
The Resume Workbook is one of my favorite of our products, and it doesn't get much airtime. It's everything Mark and I learned about resumes as recruiters, and also everything we learned from the resume review service that we did for a couple of years. We soon realized that we couldn't keep up the pace of the people that wanted personalized resume reviews, and so we put everything we knew and every misstep that we saw into the workbook so that you can work through it with your resume, making it the best it can be. A resume writer doesn't know you, your history, or what you want as well as you do. All you need is the scaffolding to put your resume together, and that's what the Resume Workbook provides. Go to manager-tools.com and look for products in the menu bar. The next thought is to create the right conditions for your work. So PokerYoke forces you into having the right conditions because it prevents you from being able to proceed until you have. So you can't turn the microwave on until you've shut the door. So if you know that your computer struggles with a complex task, then make a checklist that includes turning off anything else that might demand the resources. So you can't start until you've got the right environment.
Mm-hmm.
Turn on do not disturb so your phone can't call you before you sit down to, you know, and you want, if you think, I need 2 hours, I've got this really heavy brain work stuff to do, put your phone on do not disturb and it won't ring. It can't. Collect all your receipts before you start processing your expenses. So be in the right place before you start.
This kind of reminds me of David Allen getting things done. Mm-hmm. He talks about, you know, context and how it doesn't make any sense for your brain to be thinking about a task that you cannot do until you are at work at your desk if you're at home, mm-hmm. right? If there's something that you can't do until you're on your drive home from work, then there's no point in having it dedicated or having brain power dedicated to it now. It's that whole thing about context, and context is important. So every time you find yourself redoing a task, that's when you should be asking yourself, how could I have prevented myself from having to redo this or having made that mistake? Where you can, PokerYoke tells you to remove the ability to make the mistake at all. Over the last 10 years or so, the necessity for saving documents as you work on them has virtually disappeared. That has something to do with the way our machines work now, but also with the number of times that users would close a document having forgotten to save it and lost all their work. Finally, you know, program designers have made it so that option is taken away from us. So we can't make that mistake.
And whoever that person was, thank you.
Yes, yes, exactly. The world rejoiced.
Yeah, indeed.
When they needed to find something and they said, oh, it was already saved. It was already saved. It was auto-saved.
Angels sing every time.
Yeah. I would presume it's probably the same person that, you know, decided that if the email client could see the word attachment in a draft email, that we should be prompted to say, hey, looks like there might supposed to be an attachment here, and there isn't.
Yes, that person was reading my mind or reading my mistakes. So right. I do that all the time. Must have fallen off on the way. I can't imagine that I didn't remember to attach it.
Probably a 30% reduction in emails sent.
Yes, probably. You're right. Okay, so we've got some more short ideas. You can apply these as we suggest them, or you can think about how they apply to your work, maybe slightly differently, but hopefully they are. Just there's enough ideas of them, and they're generally enough to prompt some ideas for you. So the first one is use checklists to make sure you go through every step or include every component. I just did a submission for some government thing that I had to do, and I had a list of, you must attach these 5 documents and they must be labeled this. And I just printed it out and checked them off because it's the only time I'm ever going to do this, but it has to be done right. And so printing off the checklist is the easy way to do it.
Absolutely. And use spreadsheets or simple code to make calculations, right? Don't rely on your head or you using a 10 key every time you're going to do that. If you can build that into a spreadsheet, we've done that. We did that recently with a spreadsheet that we all use within the company. We were manually doing a little bit of a calculation. It wasn't, you know, massive or, you know, big, but every single time we put on a training, we did a little calculation. And so why not just bake that into the spreadsheet? And it's been great.
And the secret is, every formula you will ever need is already out there. Just Google whatever it is you're trying to do. And I pretend that I'm quite good at formulas. I'm actually just really good at Googling. Yeah. So I promise they're all out there.
Now you can just ask ChatGPT and it'll write it for you.
That's right. If you can get one, which can't. Apparently I'm not good enough. Yeah. Okay. So use reminders to ensure that you do tasks that aren't, or even if they are, routine. I have a list of things to do every day of the week. It tells me what to do in my first hour when I'm not caffeinated. It's stupid that I am this old and I need that, but I need it.
Yeah, totally. Include checkpoints in your processes to make sure that you haven't gone off track. There's a reason you're asked which arm is to be operated on several times before you have surgery, right?
Yeah, they keep asking you, and hopefully they get the right arm. Use templates to ensure that you include the same information or you make the same calculation every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Leave yourself some time. It's much harder to spot mistakes in something that you've just worked on than something that you've worked on yesterday or the day before. So give yourself time to review or double check.
Use spelling and grammar checks. They're not always right, but why would you not when somebody invented them for you?
Yeah.
And whenever I see something that's really spelt very badly and it's not obvious that it's obvious that somebody didn't even try to use spell check, I'm just like, why?
Oh, yeah.
Why would you make your life harder like that?
Well, this is going to sound bad. This is going to sound judgmental, but I've talked to some people about spell check before and they've said, I just turn it off because it's just constantly telling me this, that, and the other. And I finally just turned it off. And I thought, well, you shouldn't have turned it off. You should have gotten better at spelling because it doesn't underline the words if they're not spelled wrong.
That's true. If your document has lots of red lines under it, that's your problem, not the spelling.
Right. But I do understand sometimes it is grammatically, use data validation or the data validation function in spreadsheets to make sure your entries are correct. It's almost like having, a check your work button. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic.
Set your computer to automatically backup and save all the files to a shared or backup drive. Mm. I read something yesterday about somebody who's lost 16 years of blogging, and she's a house designer type blogger. And so she had, I don't know how many, millions, I guess, of photos. And she thought her backup was working and it wasn't.
Oh, no.
And it just makes me cold. So, yeah, set your computer to automatically backup and periodically check that it is.
Yeah, that's a good point. Use version numbers on documents and certainly put page numbers on, right?
Page numbers is another of those simple things. It used to drive Mark nuts when I would send him a document and it wouldn't have page numbers on. And now I'm as obsessed mm-hmm. with it as he is, because you print it out and you're like, well, which it's not obvious always what order things go in. It's the simplest thing and makes a surprising amount of difference.
I never even gave it much thought. I know that if I print something out or if I'm handed something that's printed and it doesn't have page numbers, the first thing I do with most anything is put the date that I'm looking at it and then put page numbers on. I'll just flip through real quick and put page numbers on because I'm a nerd. Periodically review the hardware or software that you use most often to see if there's any updates that will make your process better.
Sometimes they've made a change and you're like, oh, if only I'd known that that didn't work that way anymore. Or if only I'd known they solved that problem.
Right. We think of our world, I think, sometimes in a vacuum, but there's mm-hmm. a whole team of engineers and developers that are constantly trying to make things better and easier. And sometimes it's just as simple as updating software and seeing, oh, wow, somebody else already thought of this, or that somebody solved this solution or solved this issue for me. It's helpful.
Create a standard operating procedure for any complex process, or sometimes for simple processes that you get wrong a lot. Like, mm-hmm. A standard operating procedure is just a slightly more complicated way of saying checklist. It's a bit like saying human factors engineering instead of saying the stupidity principle. But
yeah. And lastly, remove instances where you have to retype the same data or information. Automate this stuff wherever you can. You know, we use pieces of software because we know we're going to have to type some of the same stuff. We just have keyboard shortcuts and types it for us. And that's great. The one that we use actually will send you an email at the end of every week telling you how much time you've saved, which I think is just really cool.
Just makes you feel smart. You don't know how much you rely on it until you use someone else's computer and they don't have it.
Oh, yeah.
I have /S is my, it says best regards, Wendy, on two mm-hmm. different lines. And I use it 1,000 times a day, it feels like. And I didn't realize how much I relied on it until I was writing a post-it note for somebody and I wrote /S. And funnily enough, it didn't translate into my thing. But literally my thought of how do I end anything is now /S.
That's so great.
But it's a good problem to have because it means I've done it so many times. I've saved that much time.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem with hacks to make your work more efficient is there's no systemic way to apply them. But by borrowing these principles, you have a higher chance of finding something that actually makes a significant difference to the amount and quality of the work you do. So if you think, okay, I'm going to fix all the problems that I create because I'm human, or I'm going to try and stop myself being able to make mistakes. It's a subset of improving your work that can make it easier to find those things. And we're not telling you to be more productive for productivity's sake. We're not just saying, oh, well, you should work harder. That's not it. But we know in general, there is too much work to be done. And when you find extra time, you want to spend it with the people that are important to you, not more work. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.